We'll look at the tape.
It's intentional grounding.
I think we got to come out hard and stay hard.
Part of Chicago's best Bears coverage.
I don't know.
Now, here they are.
They're day-to-day in my mind.
WGN Radio's very own Adam Hope.
I'm filing.
And the Chicago Sun-Times' Adam Johns.
What an a-hole.
Hug it, chug it, football!
All right, welcome in to Season 3 of Intentional Grounding. After a few weeks off, we're back. Adam Hogan, Adam Johns with you, and we are in scenic Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl.
You should list off what we can see out your hotel window right now. It is a beautiful view. There is a Toys R Us, a Target, a JCPenney, a Dollar Tree.
There's a Belk, which you don't want Arkansas tight end Jeremy Sprinkles to be going to. Boy, that guy. And he's one of the many guys we can talk to about the prospects here at the Senior Bowl. I overheard that dude get grilled by an NFL team last night over his shoplifting incident, which happened at a bowl game. We can discuss that later. But we are here at the Senior Bowl. This is what Adam just described is pretty much Mobile. That's what this place is. It's not all that great. It is a golf town on a little bay, but there's not much here except for this is where the NFL converges every year. It's my fourth year coming here. It's like your fourth or fifth year coming here. And, you know, it's a trip we make every year. It's interesting for the NFL draft to kind of unofficially kicks off the NFL draft season, even though there's been some all-star games the last couple weeks as well. But these are the top seniors that are here. We'll get into some of that, but a little bit of a different twist this year because the Bears are coaching one of the teams, which is new for us. I don't know how much it necessarily changes the practices that we watch or anything like that, but we do get availability, which we usually don't get here in Mobile. So we'll get some of that, too, because there's a little bit of Bears news. Not huge Bears news, but some of those things to talk to. And this is episode 78 of Intentional Grounding, the Keith Van Horn episode. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Read us at WGNRadio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. We both have stories up from the first day of Senior Bowl action. And find the podcast on iTunes by searching Intentional Grounding. You can subscribe for free there. So, day one, got to see two practices like normal. What was different is that we got to talk to John Fox and three new assistant coaches.
Yeah, there are three new assistants because he fired Dave Magazoo. He fired Sam Garns, two longtime assistants of his, which he admittedly, I mean, there was some emotion in his voice. Those guys have been with him at various stops in his career for years. I mean, Sam Garns was a player, I believe, for him, became his coach. He called him his guy and how that worked against him. So there was some, as much as Fox can express emotion at Ladd People's Stadium, there was some in Fox's voice about his dismissals of a Dave Magazoo and Sam Garns. So that was tough for him. Obviously, outside linebackers coach Clint Hurt, he left. Running backs coach Stan Drayton, he left to become an associate head coach at Texas, so you had Curtis Motkins taking over for him. You had Jeremiah Washburn taking over for Dave Magazoo, and you had, let me get this right, Roy Anderson taking over for Sam Garns. We're still learning these names here. But the most interesting thing is that the Bears have been, there are no rush to fill Clint Hurt's spot. Vic Fangio right now is the Bears' outside linebackers coach.
Yeah, and that was something that John Fox kind of offered up yesterday. He mentioned that that's sort of been Fangio's job already, that he's already been working closely with the outside linebackers coach. But that's not something that I don't think that was incredibly apparent to us. So I don't know how that might be an alternative fact, if we can use that word. I mean, because Clint Hurt was, if you're at least talking to the players, I mean, they liked working with Clint Hurt. The outside linebackers gave him a lot of credit. So I still think this is, while John tried to pass it off like, oh, this is kind of how it's been, this is different. I mean, it's adding responsibility to Vic Fangio. Fox said they're not going to lose the manpower, but he didn't necessarily say they were going to actually hire an offense or outside linebackers coach. I mean, they're going to hire another guy, where that guy fits in the coaching staff, we'll see. But it certainly sounds like Vic Fangio is kind of taking on a more specialized role with the pass rush on top of his already big duties of being in charge of the entire defense.
There were some practices last year, and we don't get to see much of the practices, but we get to see the individual work where Vic Fangio would sort of gravitate toward the outside linebackers during individual work, and he would actually be behind Clint Hurt or actually stepping in and instructing a Willie Young or a Sam Acho on how to do things with their handwork, footwork, and in certain reads they're going over and walkthroughs and like that. So I wonder if that kind of played into the situation. And one thing I want to point out is, you know, there was all those rumors about the score between Vic Fangio and John Fox and whatever. Roy Anderson, the defensive backs coach, is a Vic Fangio hire. We should make that clear. He's replacing a John Fox guy. So a Fangio guy is in for a John Fox guy, if that makes sense. So Anderson and Fangio overlapped for a year in Baltimore. I think it was 2009 was the season. And even Anderson's got a connection with Donatel. They just sort of became friends after meeting at an airport. So that whole rift situation, I guess we can sort of put it to bed. I mean, this Vic Fangio had a say in the hiring, and he got his guy hired.
Yeah, I realize that talking about assistant coaches isn't necessarily the most exciting thing in the world. I would venture to guess that 80 to 90% of Bears fans couldn't even name, you know, half of the positional coaches during the season. But during the month of January, when the staffs flip over, it does give you a little bit of insight as to where certain people have power within the organization. It just sort of gives you a little bit of insight as to where guys stand. And you're absolutely right. That's a great point with a Fangio guy kind of replacing a Fox guy within the defensive staff. This whole Fangio thing never made sense to me, that there was, maybe there were some disagreements. I'm sure Bill Belichick argues with some of his coordinators and assistant coaches throughout a season, right? It's sort of a healthy way to get business done in football. I never read too much into it. That was kind of taken a step further yesterday when I asked Fox about the 49ers rumors, about the 49ers reaching out to talk to Fangio about coming back. Fox said that there wasn't a formal request that was ever made to the Bears to talk to him. That doesn't mean that there weren't, you know, some back channel conversations to gauge some interest from Vic Fangio. But as Fox said, it's hard to make lateral moves in the NFL because you're under contract and teams don't have to grant you permission to talk to another team about the same exact job.
And sometimes teams block a candidate just to, because the candidate doesn't actually want that position. You know what I'm saying? It's just, look, Vic Fangio, he interviewed for the head coaching job a couple of years ago. The one that went to Jim Tom Sulo. He was supposed to be Adam Gase's defensive coordinator. Things just went completely awry there. And those guys that are still calling the shots that messed up that whole situation are still there. So why would Vic Fangio want to go back there in the first place? Obviously, the connection is there because Vic Fangio led some great defenses there as Jim Harbaugh's defensive coordinator. But those head honchos that really flub that situation with Adam Gase and Vic Fangio are still in charge. So sometimes, whether it's back channels, former requests, things are denied, whatever, sometimes teams do that because the guy himself doesn't want to do that, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I'm not – another good point. I don't know why Vic would want to leave right now to go back to a place where that organization might be a bigger mess than the Cleveland Browns right now. I mean, seriously, that's how big of a mess it is in San Francisco. They've made some bizarre coaching decisions, GM decisions, siding with the wrong people, and, you know, it sounds like they're going to get Kyle Shanahan as their head coach, but – we'll see how that whole situation goes. Here's what we're going to do. Since we talked about the assistant coaches and kind of what John Fox had to say, we're going to give you a chance to hear from John Fox because it's been a few weeks. He was, I would say, better than he usually is during the regular season when we hear from him every single day. That tends to be the case when you get a break from the media from a few weeks. So we're going to play for you John Fox's conversation with mostly – it was mostly all Chicago reporters off the practice field yesterday once the North practice wrapped up. It's about 10 minutes, so it's a little lengthy. This is a podcast, so if you don't want to listen to the whole thing, you can fast forward 10 minutes. That's the freedom of listening to a podcast. But there were some insightful things in here, so we're going to go ahead and hear from John Fox, and then we'll dive into some of the players and prospects and the NFL draft talk of the actual players that are here in Mobile. So here's Bears head coach John Fox.
John, overall, whether it's on the field or in meetings, what types of things will you keep a close watch on with players to kind of learn more about?
Well, the advantage of coaching this, you know, like another thing I mentioned is the record it takes to get here, is being able to be with them in the meeting setting. You know, basically you have meals with them. I mean, you live with them. It's like the first week of camp if you drafted them. You know, my experience about the last 7 years, I think I've drafted, you know, wherever I've been, three players from this game, you know. They're getting evaluated. They understand it. But, you know, you get an inside look at it. You know, it's not just nighttime interviews when they're worn out and tired. You get to see how they conduct themselves in meetings, how they take notes, you know, how they come out here and they practice. And you don't get any closer than this.
What kinds of things impress you from a kid when you're in those behind-the-scenes settings?
Well, I think, you know, not just, you know, when you look at tape, you're looking at helmet and shoulder pads and a jersey number, you know, so they could be robots for all you know. But you get to know the person, the guy, how he competes, you know, how he deals with things, whether it's stress or adversity or whatever they deal with, you know, and guys that can handle that the best, usually have the best success in the NFL.
How much can you see coachability out here? Like when somebody makes a mistake, you coach them up, they make the same mistake. And yeah. How much can you tell, and how important is that to you?
Well, it's super important because I think, you know, you try to minimize mistakes, and that's what we talk about when we say execution. You know, and you try to have guys that, you know, they're going to make some mistakes. You know, nobody ever plays a perfect game. But, you know, not making the same mistakes over and over again is critical. So you get a feel for that, corrections in the film room. So we'll watch tape with these guys in the morning. You know, much like we would our own players after a game or a practice, and you get a pretty good indication, and then we do it all over again tomorrow.
Anything beyond that, specifically with the quarterbacks that you look for when you're evaluating that position?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, you know, it always helps, you know, with somebody, you know, they take care of their job, but when you can inspire the people around you, I think, you know, those guys tend to be a little bit better, especially at the next level, especially at the quarterback position. You know, that's a little hard to tell after one practice, but you do look for things like that, too, just their leadership ability and some of the intangibles.
Jen, how big of a factor is knowing the personality of the players? And can it be deceiving? In other words, maybe somebody has a great personality. It might sway you one way, and maybe somebody doesn't. They might be better. I mean, how do you weigh those?
You know, Mark, anytime you're dealing with people, you know, it's not an exact science. You know, my experience has been when they have that ability or that leadership ability, you know, usually carries over. And it's been a positive trait, you know, in my experience.
Jen, a few new assistants here, Curtis Modkins in particular, what mm-hmm. excites you about him joining the staff and what he can bring to that?
Well, I think, you know, he's an excellent grass coach. I think, you know, he's been an offensive coordinator in the league, so I think he brings some things. You know, sometimes maybe guys aren't as in tune to maybe say nickel protections or some of the, you know, you know, as far as the functional part of the game at this level, you know, but I think Curtis has proven that, and he's an outstanding coach, good addition to our staff.
What about the Jeremiah Washburn on the offensive line?
You know, kind of the same. I mean, I go way back. Jeremiah was an intern for us in Carolina many moons ago. I've known his dad for 100 years, but he's not too young, and he's, you know, not too overly experienced as well, but. You know, I think he brings a good energy and you know, really good knowledge of the game. He's been on the personnel side, so he's an excellent evaluator. That's part of being a good coach too. I mean, you got to pick your starting lineup. You got to, you know, be able to pick the football team or be part of the process of picking the football team. So, you know, I think he brings a really good blend.
Last time we talked to you, Mags was still in that role. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What was it like for you to move on from him? No, especially you guys have been together for a really long time.
You know, that's always hard. You know, but whether it's players or coaches, you spend a lot of time with people. It's a relationship business. And those things are never easy. But, you know, when you sit in the seat that I sit in or Ryan sits in, you know, I think, you know, there are hard decisions and, you know, easy is not always right.
Is the tendency, Jen, to lean more on coaches that you're familiar with when you should make a change, you know what I'm saying? Is it harder? Is it that much harder to make a decision like that with somebody you're so familiar with, and the coaches just tend to stay with the guy they've got and maybe overlook some deficiencies because of
that? Well, it wasn't like, you know, that was, you know, a real problem position. If you look at, and I've talked about this, you know, as far as some of the things you look at evaluating offensive line play on a season is, you know, per rush average and per pass sack, you know, so there were some good things, but at the end of the day, it was time for a change, and you know, we did it.
Are you done making hires? Are you still looking for a replacement for Clint Hurt?
Yeah, I mean, we are, but, you know, Vic's kind of the outside linebacker coach anyways, and even was before. You know, I think, you know, it's a position that, you know, is really handled by Vic. You know what I mean? So, you know, we're right now even coaching without, you know, that position coach. So, you know, we'll still look at it. We're not going to lose the body or the manpower. We'll hire somebody, but we're not in a big rush.
What do you think Vic can do with that position group to bring him along? Obviously, Leonard being one of those guys that's going to continue to develop. And
well, like I said, he had the responsibility over that position even the last 2 years. And so that is not going to be a real deviation from what we've done.
Moving on from Sam Garns as well, mm-hmm. He'd been with you for a long time as well. What prompted the change there?
Well, I think, you know, with Sam, you know, he kind of been my guy. You know, he played for me in New York. You know, I brought him with him as an assistant special teams coach in Carolina. You know, brought him out to Denver from there and brought him to the DB side. He went through a couple, you know, different coordinators there. Guys left. You know, it was almost a negative for him that he was my guy. You know, so I think, you know, he'll get the opportunity to get another job in the league and, you know, go out and establish himself, you know, in the National Football League.
It's nice to get some of these practices in with the new coaches as opposed to waiting until May to get those in.
Yeah, I think, you know, again, anytime you can coach, you know, it's like playing. You know, the more you do it, the better you get. So it's a good experience for those guys and good practice.
How much of it was a priority to maybe have them hired in here before the Senior Bowl got going to help with your evaluation?
I think it's important. You know, I think, you know, even a guy like Sean Desai, who's our quality control coach, he's getting an opportunity to kind of spend some time on the field, you know, coaching on the grass and get a chance to evaluate them. You know, Richard Hightower, our assistant special teams coordinator, gets more time. You know, so it's a good experience for a young coach to get some on the field grass experience.
When you meet with these guys for the first time, like last night, the North squad, what kind of message do you want to get across to them about leaving college and going into professional football, just in general, not necessarily where they're going to play or anything?
I mean, these guys have had this dream, you know, many of them since they were like 11 years old, you know, have been playing competitive football. You know, not all of them, but a lot of them. You know, even in an all-star game like this, a lot of these guys were recruited to the same colleges, and, you know, they know guys from high school, they know guys on your team. You know, there's a huge, I think there was 87 people on this roster that were drafted in the National Football League just from this game. This is kind of the granddaddy, you know, not slighting any other all-star games, but it's been around a long time. And, you know, I think they understand it's an honor to be here, and it's a privilege. And, you know, I think the next step is something they've been dreaming about their whole life.
When you're meeting with Ryan in the front office, guys, especially with the unique opportunity to be up close to these guys, what are those conversations like about these prospects?
Well, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, NFL coaching standpoint, like our staff, you know, we're not nearly as familiar with them. I mean, we haven't been looking at them all season long. You know, we've been, you know, coaching our guys. So the scouts, you know, give you kind of a thumbnail on each guy, you know, on both squads, North and the South. In fact, you know, someday this week, later in the week, we're actually going to switch teams. You know, there's a switch-up time. We spend an hour with them. You know, we'll meet them in a team setting and break down and have the opportunity to get to talk to them, you know, coach them up. The biggest thing is typically if you're not coaching them in these games, you're getting a 15-minute interview and you don't get as good a feel as you do, you know, as you would a whole week with them like you would the first week of your camp.
So, John, even though you are loath to name names, in a setting like this one day, were there people who caught your eye?
The loath thing kind of got me. Yeah. But I love how you put that there, though. These are our players, but, you know, I think after one practice, it's a little bit hard to say, you know, there's a second coming, but not quite the loathing. But, you know, again, I was impressed by their work ethic and how they went about their business. And, you know, you don't know what kind of shape these guys are in. They've been off for a little bit, but everybody looks like they've been taking care of themselves, and we made it through pretty healthy.
The one assistant we didn't get to, Roy Anderson, coaching the safeties. What about him?
kind of stands out to you?
You know, again, some guys have spent time with him. I think Vic was with him for a brief time in Baltimore. We got some guy. I have a very good friend that was with him 4 years in the secondary in Indianapolis. So I think he brings some experience and, you know, again, I think spent some time on the personnel side. So evaluation, you know, that's all, you know, part of coaching. But I think he's been a good addition.
Vic's obviously under contract. Mm-hmm. There's talk that the 49ers want to talk to him. Is that just like a case-by-case thing when you have those situations in January?
You know, again, what people come up with, reports or whatever that stuff is, I have no idea. He's under contract. It's pretty hard to make lateral moves in this league under contract. We've had no formal asking, you know, the normal protocol, so I have no idea.
If you had to pick one player tonight,
so you guys are bound and determined. You guys pick one. You watch the practice.
We'll ask on Thursday.
Yeah, that'd be better. Thank you. I'm still learning everybody's name.
Okay, so most of that stuff in there we previously discussed before we played John for you there. So we'll move on and talk a little bit about the first day of practices in Mobile. First of all, this tends to be the case because the SEC is so loaded with good talent, but typically the South team has a few more top-end prospects, first-rounders, than the North team. I think that is again the case this year here at the Senior Bowl. There's still plenty of talent on the Bears roster, the North team, but the South has a few first-round talents, and I think that that showed up on the first day. However, I will say, the quarterbacks on the South looked terrible yesterday. I mean, they could not complete a pass.
I went over to Hugh Jackson's, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, who was coaching that South team. And I dropped in his scrum, and I found it curious that he said that he was happy with what his South quarterbacks did. He specifically mentioned Josh Dobbs, the Tennessee quarterback, and how he was impressed with his completion percentage and how he threw the ball. And I kept thinking to myself at that moment, were we watching the same player? Because I literally went, we were sitting next to each other in the stands, and they were air balls, I mean, overthrows, balls in the dirt. I literally said woof to myself at one point. It was so bad. So I don't know what he's saying. Sure, he's probably talking up his guys that he's going to coach for a week, but the South team has some. Look, the best quarterback here, this is what we should be talking about, is on the North team. Nate Peterman. I keep hearing positive things about him. It's the Pittsburgh quarterback. He beat Clemson this year. Didn't beat Northwestern, but he beat Clemson. He's got the size, decent size. He's got some accuracy. He's got a high completion percentage in college. Just what are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I was impressed with day one. I think that Davis Webb, the Cal quarterback on the South team, has maybe the highest ceiling just in terms of having the most NFL-ready arm. I mean, he has the biggest cannon here in Mobile. But as we saw yesterday, I mean, every pass was going 10 feet above his target's head. So what's the point of having a big arm if you can't complete the passes? So I agree that day one, Nathan Peterman was the winner among the quarterbacks. I wrote that in my day one observations. He doesn't have the strongest arm. I compared his arm to Matt Barkley just to kind of give Bears fans an idea of the strength. I'm not saying his game is like Matt Barkley. But what I said consistently about Matt Barkley during the second half of the season when he was starting games for the Bears, he has a good enough arm if he makes the right decisions. What we learned about Matt Barkley is he didn't always make the right decisions, and he kept throwing interceptions. So the positive thing about Peterman is if you look at his season, he mostly took care of the football. Very high TD to interception ratio. Now, I got a chance to watch him up close at Yankee Stadium in the Pinstripe Bowl when they played Northwestern, and I was on the sidelines. It was sort of a mixed reaction because I came away impressed. I came away thinking, okay, this guy can play in the NFL, but he didn't always, in that game, he didn't necessarily make all the great decisions. I forgot if Northwestern got him once or twice because he ended up getting hurt in that game and had a concussion, didn't finish the game. The backup came in and was not very good. Part of the reason why Northwestern was able to win that game. But I like Peterman. I agree he was the best quarterback in the first day of action here. I would say, to me, he kind of fits the mold of these middle-round quarterbacks that, you know, maybe a Kirk Cousins in the fourth round who, again, if he makes all the right decisions, can have a very nice NFL career. If not, is not going to make it very long because there is a little bit of a limitation in the arm strength.
There was a buzz about him, at least in the NFL circles I was talking to on the way down here. That continued on the first night I was here. It continued on the second night I was here. It continued actually during practice yesterday. I think he's very impressive in his interviews. He has some of those, look, quarterbacks are all judged by their intangibles and how they can hold themselves, compose themselves, how they handle themselves amongst their teammates.
Well, what did John Fox say yesterday? Because we just heard him. It wasn't along the lines of, you know, the best quarterbacks make the guys around them better.
So he may have some of those qualities. I don't know if it all came out at Pittsburgh, but again, this is a projection that NFL teams, the Bears who are coaching this kid, have to make it in what he could be. And you're right, he may be at best a third-round pick, but that doesn't mean he cannot be an NFL starter. I mean, this game has produced, yes, your Carson Wentz's, your number two overall picks, but Kirk Cousins came from this game. Jimmy Garoppolo, second-round pick, emerged from this game. Derek Carr, second-round pick, emerged from this game. Russell Wilson emerged from this game. So there is a history of being able to find quarterbacks from this Senior Bowl game, the Senior Bowl week, that aren't your Carson Wentz number two overall first-round picks. They could come in later rounds, second, third, or fourth rounds.
So let's talk about the Bears' connection here because the Bears are coaching Peterman. I mean, and that is it's a huge advantage because they are spending the time in the meeting rooms with them. Now, all the teams can talk to whoever they want at night, and I saw a lot of that go on last night in the hotel where the players are staying. It's kind of a free-for-all and the way they meet with all these NFL teams out in the open, but is a big difference between a 15-minute conversation where it's almost like speed dating, you know, and you're trying to jot down all these notes and try to get to know every single player, as opposed to the Bears' intimate time that they're spending with this entire roster throughout the week. So, it'll be interesting to see how the Bears kind of evaluate Peterman this week because they're, you know, Dow Loggins was working with him very, very closely yesterday as they're going through individual quarterback drills. And that's, you know, he's going to be a huge influence on whichever quarterback, and we're assuming that the Bears are going to draft a quarterback at some point, and who they can take. Because, we'll talk about this a million times between now and April, but I'm not sold that there's a guy that they should be taking at number three. And you don't want to be reaching for that. So, you know, I'd rather be reaching for a guy like Peterman in the third round or maybe even the second round. I think that's probably a little too early. We'll see how this goes. But maybe like the third. I'd rather take like – if he's like a fourth round guy, I'd rather reach for him in the third than reach for a guy who, you know, we don't really know if he's going to be good with the number three overall pick. When you can take a much safer impact type player who can benefit your defense right away.
Dabo Swinney delivered the quote of the day yesterday. In at least in my mind, when he compared, what did he say? If you're passing on Deshaun Watson, you're passing on Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Now, look, that's praise from a college coach that you're going to get at a time this year. He's gonna pump up his guy, but NFL coaches are going to go to him for evaluations on Watson. Watson turned down the invitation to come here, obviously. Dabo would love to see his guy go number one to the Browns, number three to the Bears. So, I mean, it was a message to everybody who needs a quarterback, and the Bears are among those teams. But you're right. The quarterback class, I heard it again, God, the past couple days. It's maybe that's why there's such a buzz about Peterman here. It's so-so. I think that might be a good way to put it. It's average. You don't have your Wentzes. You don't have your Goffs. I mean, last year when Carson Wentz was here, remember the windy day? And Cody Kessler's balls were sailing. The kid from Stanford, was Kevin Hogan's, his balls were going in the dirt. And Carson Wentz was cutting through that wind and, you know, making 35, 40-yard completions, you know, just great throws. People were literally oohing and aahing in the stands. I don't know if you're going to get that this year about any quarterback. It just doesn't exist. And, yes, quarterbacks tend to rise up draft boards because of the importance of the position. But, look, if I'm the Bears, you find a sure thing at number three, someone who could start for you in day one, and that's not going to be a quarterback.
What you just said is what I look for when I'm here. A guy who separates themselves among the rest of the guys at that position, specifically when they get into one-on-ones, you know, whether it's quarterbacks or like what Aaron Donald did a few years ago, just absolutely dominating every single offensive lineman he faced in one-on-one drills. It was like, okay, yeah, this guy's undersized, but he's special. You know, he's just special. With the quarterbacks, we saw that a couple years ago with Derek Carr. Derek Carr was far and away the best guy that was here in Mobile. He was doing what you just talked about. I mean, while other guys were struggling to complete passes, he was throwing darts all around the field. Jimmy Garoppolo was behind him and was pretty decent too. He wasn't as good, but you could tell there was something there too, and the rest of the guys were kind of over here. I think that's what concerns me a little bit about this Peterman hype. I think everyone's kind of looking for somebody to be that guy this year. I don't know that I saw from Peterman yesterday that kind of separation. You know, he was good. I think he was the best quarterback that was here on day one, and we'll see how it continues the next 2 days. But I don't know that he was, you know, separating himself from a pack that isn't all that impressive. He's going with the two other guys on the north are C.J. Beathard, who I've seen play a ton the last couple years at Iowa, and he was a solid quarterback, but there's a clear limitation there, and I'm not confident he's going to make it in the NFL. Sefo Lufau from Colorado. I mean, these guys, Peterman's better than these two, but I don't know that it was, at least on, and we're talking about one practice here, but I don't know that he was, you know, putting on the performance that a Derek Carr did a couple years ago, where he was clearly better.
Do you know who stood out yesterday? I think it's going to stand out this entire week. Tight end, Alabama,
yeah.
O.J. Howard.
That's me. What I'm talking about. Yeah. That guy was clearly the best player on the field yesterday.
And this is supposed to be a deep class for safeties and cornerbacks. There's some very good ones here. We can ramble off a bunch of names about safeties and quarterbacks. O.J. Howard, at times, whether it's running down the seam, one-on-ones, seven-on-sevens, whatever, looked like a man against boys. He is huge. He is big. He is fast. He's imposing. That's a first-round pick right there who did himself some good by going back to college. He stood out. He's just a monstrous man. He can run well. And the way he – look, he's going to command attention, but I don't think at least what they have going on here that they have anybody who is prepared or has the skill – enough to stop him one-on-one here at the Senior Bowl.
Let's talk about some of the other big-name guys that are here because, let's be honest, most of the players at the Senior Bowl are mid- to late-round picks. The majority of them won't actually make it more than 3 years in the NFL. A lot of them are going to end up being special teamers who fizzle out, end up on practice squads, things like that. But there are a lot of – well, I don't want to say a lot of, but there's definitely guys that are borderline first-round picks – to second-round picks. I think O.J. Howard is the one guy who is clearly a first-round talent, and there's no question about it. Montrevious Adams, defensive tackle out of Auburn, borderline first-round guy who could be available to the Bears early in the second round. You know, we don't talk about that enough. Bears have the number three overall pick. That's great. The first five picks in the second round, there are first-round talents that fall out. Even when the Bears got Eddie Goldman a couple years ago, a little bit later in the second, that was a first-round talent that fell back. So there's a huge advantage, too, of having that early second-round pick, which will actually be the fourth pick in the second round because they're going to be flip-flopping with the Jaguars throughout the draft because they had the same record. So Montrevious Adams is a guy who could help the defensive line. Ryan Anderson, who, if you watch the national championship game, the outside linebacker for Alabama, that dude was all over the field. Sized him up last night. He's a huge dude. He's actually from just a little bit far away from here in Mobile, so he's kind of a local kid. And he's another guy who early second round could still be there, or he could go up a little bit earlier in the first round. I don't know that guard is the Bears' biggest need, because they have Josh Sitton and they have Kyle Long. But Dan Feeney, the guard from Indiana, that's a guy who I think should go in the first round. He was very impressive yesterday too. So that's another guy to keep an eye on. Tre'Davious White, the corner from LSU too, he's a guy, came in a little under 6 feet tall, so he's not the tallest corner you're going to find, but known for, you know, his physicality at the line of scrimmage. A lot of people think he could go in the first round too. And I don't know why Michigan's Jordan Lewis doesn't get more credit. You know, everyone talks about Jabril Peppers. This dude has the – Lewis has the – he's undersized, and that's what the knack is going to be, and that's why he's not going to get drafted in the first round, and it might even be a reach for the Bears early in the second. If for some reason he's still around in the third, he's got the physicality, the ball skills to fit in Vic Fangio's defense. And that's a guy who I think at a huge position of need for the Bears could help too.
Look, some of the underclassmen obviously will move some of these guys down some draft boards, but you mentioned that high second-round pick. A guy like Jordan Lewis could ideally fit in there. Look, the Bears need – they have Tracy Porter. They have Bryce Callahan. They have Cravon LeBlanc. Kyle Fuller's not out of the picture quite yet. But the Bears need help in the secondary. Yes, we all know they need safeties. They need safeties. We get it. But they need a playmaking cornerback as well, a young guy who can be what Kyle Fuller was supposed to be and never turned out to be, other than that one great rookie year he had. So, yes, he stands out to me. You know, we had a good day as far as local kids go. Evan Glasgow from Michigan. Did you see him in one-on-one drills? Very impressive. I don't know if he's a second or third round pick yet. You know, I'm sure things will fluctuate. But as far as first days go, first impressions, not too bad for the kid from Marmion.
Couple other guys I wrote about. This is a dude you probably never heard of, Grambling's Chad Williams, a wide receiver, kind of a late add here. He's just a little over 6 feet tall, but plays, you know, a little bit like I don't know, Alshon Jeffery's the tallest wide receiver, but he's always played bigger than his size because he's got a huge body and he's able to high point the football. That's kind of what I saw from Williams yesterday, so that's a guy to keep an eye on. At safety, because that's another huge need for the Bears, Justin Evans from Texas A&M showed a lot of range yesterday and some ball skills, so I like what I saw from him too.
We got to mention Desmond King, the Iowa cornerback. Yeah. I want to mention him because there's a receiver here. I'm going to make what's his name? Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. Did I pronounce that right? From Eastern Washington. The guy's got, 400-something receptions in his college career. He is the real deal. And he had a great one-on-one matchup a couple times with Desmond King, a pretty good standout cornerback from Iowa. And I think Kupp won most of those battles. And this is a guy they're projecting maybe first, late first, second round. He's got some size, great route runner. But those individual matchups with a receiver, a decorated college receiver, going up against a cornerback from a bigger program, I love those type of matchups here. And right now, Cooper Kupp, who's on the Bears North team, took it to Desmond King.
Yeah, he was one of those. He's from Eastern Washington, SCS school. He's one of those kind of smaller school names that you love to see here at Senior Bowl, see what they can do against talent from big-time programs. I love that when I see a guy like that have success. That's what that's what I saw from DeAndre Hall last year, who came from Northern Iowa in FCS school, who showed up here and was shutting down, you know, top wide receivers from huge SEC schools. So, I guess he was probably on the North team. I'm forgetting now at this point. But there's a couple other interesting names. Zay Jones, wide receiver from East Carolina. Dude caught 158 passes last year. 158 passes in one season. Ryan Switzer. This is every time I watch a Mitch Trubisky tape, Ryan Switzer shows up all over the field. He's North Carolina's wide receiver. Dude weighed in at just 5'8 and a half. 5'8 and a half. And I stood next to him after practice. He looked smaller than that. And you're going, how was he just, like, he was open the whole day. He was open the whole day. He's very explosive. He runs his routes well. We were sitting in the stands watching him, and I think I kind of mentioned he seems like a smaller but better version of Daniel Braverman. So I don't know where he's going to get drafted. He's so little, but he can certainly run routes well.
We have to talk about the massive safety on the Bears North team. Can you pronounce his name? You're the radio guy. Well, let's try this out. Obi Melifonwu. You try it.
Obi Melifonwu.
Melifonwu. Either way, Obi. Look, on this sheet we got right here, measured at 6'3", 217 pounds. Roy Anderson yesterday compared him, at least size and maybe not potential, but just in terms of the way he looks with his equipment on, to George Ioka, who is a pretty tall safety for the Cincinnati Bengals. And he even mentioned the name Cam Chancellor, who is part of the Legion of Boom secondary for the Seahawks, as we all know. Now, I don't know if he'll be what those guys are, but this is a very intriguing, maybe mid-round projected safety that the Bears can coach up for we can get to know.
Yeah. It's he's a big dude, there's no question. So we've only seen two of six practices so far here in Mobile. There's going to be a lot more to come. We'll both have more stories up, WGNRadio.com/Bears and ChicagoSunTimes.com. I'll continue to give you more names to kind of watch and my impressions from the practices here. There's even more than we just talked about in today's day one observations. But it's always a fun week to kind of get to know these guys, as the Bears are doing. I mean, it's funny because I was talking to Jeremiah Washburn, the Bears' new offensive line coach, just kind of when we got to meet him yesterday, and he was like, I mean, this is weird because you don't even know these guys' names, and you're trying to coach them up and get to know them. So it's kind of a free-for-all. And then they go through these, you know, day one is a kind of a weird day. It starts with them having to stand in their underwear in a conference, well, this huge, like, ballroom in front of hundreds of media and coaches and scouts, and they get weighed in, and it's very awkward. And then the whole day ends after they go through practice and meetings and media interviews with them getting grilled by coaches, and mostly scouts, but some coaches, that they start doing these interviews with the teams. They get asked bizarre questions. And like I said, I overheard, just because I was sitting up there working, the one team grilling Jeremy Sprinkle, the Arkansas tight end, who got in trouble for shoplifting from a Belk store. We don't have Belks up in Chicago, but I think it's like a Best Buy. I think it's an electronics store. And there's the Belk Bowl, which you may have heard of. And Arkansas was in the Belk Bowl, and they got to go on a Belk shopping spree. They had like $450 to spend, which sounds awesome. Well, he tried to throw some extra things in there and get more. So that's just a horrible way to end your college career, because he got suspended from the game. It's silly because you're already getting a bunch of free gifts. So this dude's getting grilled for that, and he's going to have to explain that to every single team he talks to from now until April. That's the kind of stuff that these guys go through, and it starts here at the Senior Bowl.
That's why coaching is so unique, because these guys got a lot of distractions going on. Their agents are here. Some of their college coaches are here. For some of these guys who are from Alabama or from the SEC, some of their family is here. So there's a lot of things pulling them away from the actual practice week. And that's why when Frank Smith gets that guy in the tight ends room and that guy is able to apply what he is teaching, they come out with a pretty good evaluation. Because let's face it, during in the NFL season, there's a lot of things going on in these guys' lives more than just football. I know football is first to a lot of them, but they're still human beings. They got a lot of things going on. So they got a lot of things going on here for these young guys in Mobile. They're trying to impress. They're trying to, you know, say hi to people. They got, again, agents advising them in their ear. They got all this advice in the back of their head. And the Bears coaches have these guys in a unique, intimate situation where they're trying to teach them, and they come out with better evaluations because they have that special type of access.
Also, another underrated benefit I think the Bears have here coaching this week is just the time they get with the new assistants or any changes they're kind of making within their coaching. It's a different – they're not coaching these guys like they're coaching the Bears during the season. But John Fox kind of compared this to the first week of training camp when everyone's just trying to get back in the flow and get in the routine. And so for these three new assistants that come in, literally, I mean, Jeremiah Washburn hasn't even moved to Chicago yet. You know, I mean, these guys just got hired last week and they're getting thrown into the fire here. But they get to learn the coaching styles of John Fox, Vic Fangio, Dow Loggins, whatever. And so you get that camaraderie going on this week too. So there's a lot of benefits for the Bears. You can tell Ryan Pace is really excited about it. You can tell, I think John Fox, if he had any reservations, has come around to it because there's definitely a lot of benefits for that. So we're going to wrap things up here in Mobile. It's always fun to do these off-season podcasts with you. We'll be back, of course, next month at the NFL Combine if we maybe we'll do one in between then, too. We'll see. But at least we'll be back at the NFL Combine. You can follow us on Twitter, at Adam Hogue, H-O-G-E, at Adam Johns, J-A-H-N-S. Again, read us at WGNradio.com/BearsChicagoSunTimes.com. Plenty of content from Mobile up there. And subscribe to the podcast for free on iTunes. Please rate and review the podcast there if you like listening. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I got to make a correction. I think I got the Glasgow kid's name wrong. His first name is Ryan. I believe his brother is Evan. And we know we got a lot of local listeners, maybe in the Marmion Aurora area. So Ryan Glasgow, make sure I got that right. Ryan Glasgow, defensive tackle from Michigan, was very impressive on day one of the Senior Bowl practices.
Yeah, you don't want to miss the local kids, like the kicker from Memphis.
I got an email about that. He's from Lyons Township. Who else is here? Jaleel Johnson, defensive tackle from Iowa. He's from Montini. We mentioned Dan Feeney. I think he's from Sandberg. And another family member here, Ethan Poshik from LSU. I believe he is from Lamont, the center. His brother was a Graham. Yeah. The played at Illinois. Made a little trip to Bourbonnais, I believe, under Phil Emery. He's here as well. And I thought he had a pretty good first day, too, actually, according to my notes.
He is actually a big-time center prospect. I mean, could go in, like, the second round. He's a big dude for a center. But I think he's going to be an early pick. It's kind of interesting he ended up at LSU. We asked him about that yesterday, and he just said, "Yeah, I just kind of wanted to go my own path." That's what he did. So, and he had a great career at LSU. All right, we'll wrap things up here. Episode 78 of Intentional Grounding. Fun as always. Appreciate you listening. We'll be back again, at the NFL Combine, if not earlier than that. We'll talk to you then.